Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and today I have my favorite and fellow Inner Circle coach, Jordan Syatt, back in the house. Today, Jordan and I talk all about maintenance. Maintenance seems to be this phase that is getting a little bit of a bad rap, and we want to clarify what maintenance is, what it is not, why it could actually be the key for fat loss sustainability. So go grab your coffee, put up your feet, take a listen. I think you are going to love this episode, and we think by the end of it, you will have a much better understanding of just how maintenance can help you. Enjoy the episode. Hello, hello, hello.
How are you, Susan? Good to see you.
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Right up here in my buddy's closet, talking to you from his closet, from his boiling hot closet in here.
Why are you in his closet?
Because he's outside, and it would be unfair of me to be just in his apartment, just having a podcast. Hey, you sit over there. I'm just going to make a lot of noise for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
Between the Inner Circle Live and this, I was like, all right, I'll just go in your closet.
Yeah. I have to find places every now and again here, too. Yeah. I haven't been in a closet yet, though.
Yeah, I feel like the closet can be either a great place for productivity or the worst place, depending on the size of the closet.
This is true. Well, it's great to see you either way. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, it's the same. I see states opening up all over the place. So there's definitely the jealousy of being like, really want New York to open up, understanding why that it's still the way it is, but still I think speaking for basically everyone, saying like, I'm ready for life to go back to normal as quickly as humanly possible.
100%. Imagine us, where our state opened phase one on Friday, except our region, Northern Virginia.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. It's like so close.
How big is your region?
We have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 counties. Huge. We take a huge chunk of the top of Virginia. It's the whole top of Virginia. I mean, we could drive not even an hour and probably get to parts that are starting to open up a little bit, maybe 45 minutes, something like that. So we could drive somewhere and whatever, but here, not so much. At least the rules were not supposed to, but I see places like Dick's Sporting Goods was open yesterday. Like,
oh, really?
Tim went in there and he said that, you know how big that store is. It's huge,
yeah,
right?
It's massive.
They allow 10 people in at a time. 10.
Wow.
So he walked in there and it was like, he was alone.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole thing is crazy. Hopefully the beginning of the end, hopefully.
Well, I'll tell you. So something that I've been talking to a lot of people about, like almost every day, is kind of what's happening with their nutrition during this time, especially if they're still trying to count calories or they're trying to lose weight and all the issues with that. And the word maintenance comes up all the time. I want to say the M word because people talk about it like it's a bad thing, you know?
Yeah, that's so true.
I don't know. People seem to think that that is a bad thing if they decide not to stay in a deficit right now. Do you hear a lot about that?
Absolutely. I think what you just said is it paints a great picture because I think a lot of people think of maintenance as a sign of failure. They don't deserve to be in maintenance if they haven't reached their goal yet. And they view it as stagnation of progress. They view it as almost as though they're giving up, which is interesting. And you and I have spoken about this ad infinitum in the Inner Circle with our maintenance manual and everything. But the reality is, and this is one of the best things that you and I have done with maintenance is we renamed it to momentum, because what'll happen is people will, they're afraid to go into maintenance because they think it means they're giving up or they haven't achieved their goal yet and they don't want to lose all their progress. But what'll happen is then they'll oftentimes restrict too much until the point where they can't do it anymore. And then they just significantly overeat for a period of time. So they end up spinning their wheels, not making the progress they want. When in reality, if they had just slightly increased their calories to a maintenance calorie intake, then they would have been able to take a quick break, build muscle, get stronger, feel better emotionally, physically, mentally, and then go back into a fat loss phase and actually be consistent with it rather than always spinning their wheels and never actually seeing the results.
So why do you think that is such, I mean, it's the mindset piece of that. Like people can't wrap their heads around the benefit, which you clearly just stated. I mean, the benefits are huge, but there's something that's pushing against them for them not being able to accept maintenance or accept what that period would be. I mean, it's an interesting thing that we do to ourselves. It's fascinating to me. And I can kind of relate to it because the first thing that people ask me is, well, is the scale going to go up? I mean, that's the first thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's, you know, exactly, it's that right. Sense
of, it's panic.
That's exactly right. And you're 100% correct. It is usually that they're most worried about seeing the scale go up. And to them, that means they're losing their progress. If the scale goes up, it means they've ruined their progress. Everything that they've worked so hard for. And usually what that means is working so hard for means restricting so severely for, right?
Yes.
So I've restricted myself so severely in order to lose this much weight. And I'm still not even at my goal yet. So why would I willingly increase my calories to ruin all of the hard work I've done so far? And I think that's what puts people in a position of resisting maintenance when this is all about perspective, right? If they objectively analyze their actions, they objectively analyze, listen, because what people will say is, and this happens a lot for like the calorie intake in the inner circle, people will be like, what would the calories be too high? Right? The calories are too high from
always the, hear that.
And,
yeah.
And we'll be like, okay, so for example, they'll say something to the effect of, your calculator is telling me that I should be eating 1800 calories a day, but I can't lose weight with anything over 1200. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, how do you know you can't lose weight with anything over 1200? How do you know that? It's like, well, anytime I've lost weight, it's always had to be 1200. Otherwise I don't lose it. And when we speak with them and actually get them to objectively analyze their consistency and what's going on, what'll happen is they'll eat 1200 and then they'll maybe do that for a few days or for a few weeks or maybe even a few months or very, very low calories until they can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is then they regain it all because they end up eating significantly more than that, whether it's 2000, 2500, 3000, they're binging or whatever it is. They just decide to, they screw it and they quit altogether. When the reality is, if they just ate slightly more, if they ate 1,500, if they ate 1,800 calories on a consistent basis, then they wouldn't feel so deprived. They wouldn't feel so severely restricted, and they'd be able to maintain that for longer with slower fat loss. And I think that's where so much of the fear stems from. They're like, well, I can only lose weight on this. Well, it's like, okay, well, let's increase it to 1,800 or 2,000. And they freak out when the reality is it's not that much of an increase from what they should be doing all along.
Yeah. And I guess when they are in the – that 1200 or 1300 or whatever, that's all they're thinking about are those days where they're basically suffering, whatever, if you want to even say Monday through Thursday or whatever, those days where they're staying there in that range and they're miserable. And then the weekend comes and sometimes I don't think they even go on a binge. They just don't keep track of things. And what they think is happening is not what's happening. I mean, I honestly think people truly believe they haven't eaten that much more,
correct,
you know, on the weekends, when the reality is you ate a hell of a lot more than what you think. But all they don't even remember that part. You know, all they remember is the bad part. So that's in their head, exactly right. It's like, I can't do it. I can't lose weight more than that.
You're 100% right. It's very interesting because what they'll remember is they'll remember a couple things. Number one, they'll remember the severe restriction during the week, everything that they said no to, all of the treats or pies or desserts or birthdays or ice creams or pizzas. They'll remember every time they said, no, I can't have that. That's bad. They'll remember all of that. What they'll also remember is the quick weight loss as a result of that. they'll remember they lost 4 pounds in a week or whatever it is. And then it's very interesting because if you look at the brain activity in a gambler, it's the same. You get the same response or almost exactly the same brain response when someone wins versus when they almost win. Right. And so gamblers, they have this thing where when they almost win, they'll be like, oh, I was so close. I almost won. And they'll also think about how much money they put down, how long they sat there, how long they waited, how much time and effort they put into it. So all of the time and effort they put into it in order to get that brain reaction of like, almost once. And they keep doing it, they keep betting, they keep putting down more money. And that's how people lose their homes, their families, their jobs, everything. It's same thing with weight loss. They'll put in all of this time, all of this effort, all of this restriction, and they just think about all of that. And then they associate that with their quick weight loss, which is they think, well, this is what I must do in order to see results. When the reality is you went from one extreme to another. You went from eating essentially doing nothing, which is a lot of people will say, these are a lot of times the people who call themselves a perfectionist. Well, I'm a perfectionist. I need to be doing it perfect or not at all. And the reality, they went from either essentially doing more or less nothing to being severely restrictive, when the reality is there's a huge middle ground there that you didn't actually try consistently, that's where the magic is.
100% is where the magic is. And isn't it interesting that people feel like it's all or nothing? Like when they first start something, I'm all in, and there's excitement and there's, you know, all what a motivation, whatever, they're just all charged up. And then that's an impossible level to keep. You'll burn out with that. I mean, in anything, you'll burn out with that. You can't keep that up. It's impossible. It's impossible.
You will never be motivated forever. It's just, it's saying, how do I get motivated? It's sort of like saying, how do I get happy?
Yeah.
Right. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. No one would ever in their right mind ever say, yay, you could be happy all the time, ever. And in this, under the exact same logic, you would never say, yeah, you could be motivated all the time. It's an emotion. It's a feeling you get. You will not always have that. And this comes in the cliche saying of like, well, discipline over motivation. But it's something that you and I talk about constantly is, well, what is the one common factor that will lead to more motivation? What is the one thing you can do that will cause motivation? Well, so we have to sort of work backwards. The reason there are two main reasons people get motivated. Number one is fear. People get motivated out of fear of dying, fear of being judged, fear of missing out, for whatever it is. That fear can cause motivation. The other major reason, that major thing that causes motivation, is results. Seeing something actually work. And what's the actual cause behind that? What's the actual reason behind that? Is it increases your confidence. It increases your belief in your ability to succeed. When you believe you can actually succeed, you get more motivated. It's like, wow, like if I know I'm actually going to do this, if I'm actually capable of doing it, of course I'm more motivated. Most people don't actually believe they can succeed. They don't actually believe in themselves. So then keep working backwards. How do you increase your belief in yourself? How do you increase your ability to succeed? Or how do you get results? Well, you have to start. Take action. You have to do something. And it's so funny. One of my most popular posts on Instagram consistently is talking about how beneficial walking is.
Yeah.
Just walking. Just like consistently. Like walking is the single most underrated, incredible form of exercise to improve your health, lose fat, to improve your mental health, emotional health, physical health, cellular health, everything. It's so overlooked. So many people just think that it doesn't do anything. When the reality is it does so much. And if you just started with walking another 5 minutes a day, that would be enough action to often see results, to believe in yourself, to get more motivated, to take more action.
To take more action. You know, it's so interesting about walking. I used to be that person that thought if I went out for a walk, I had to walk. Like I had to walk. I mean, with a purpose, like, or it was not worth my time. Literally, that's what I thought. It was not worth my time because I wasn't working.
Sweating. You weren't
drenched. I wasn't sweating. Yeah. I was being lazy. I was just walking. And how that's so not true. It's been a revelation for me over the past couple of years.
It's so funny you say that because it's so many people who are not as educated or understanding of the science of exercise physiology and all of this, what they'll say is when they hire a personal trainer or do a new program, they'll be like, they'll brag about how destroyed they were. They'll brag about how wrecked their coach made them, about how the new program is so brutal and terrible and makes them sweaty and tired and just they can't even walk afterwards. They brag about it like a badge of honor. And the reality is, listen, it's not bad to feel tired. Like I would say, if you're never sore or never tired after a workout, you're probably not working hard enough.
Yeah.
But the reality is, just because you're sore and tired does not make it a good workout. And just because you're not sore and tired does not mean it's a bad workout and doesn't mean it wasn't worthwhile. And that's where I think a lot of people get this idea about walking is, well, how can it be so good for you if it doesn't even get you tired, doesn't even make you sore? It's like soreness and tiredness does not equate to effectiveness. It is true. I mean, sleeping, it's like we all know sleeping is super important. You lie in a bed, hopefully, if you're lucky enough to have a comfortable bed, you lie in a bed and you close your eyes. And without doing that, you will not recover. You will not function well. You will probably die at some point if you don't get enough sleep. Yeah. You go insane. You literally go insane. There are different types of training to elicit different responses in your body. No one would say that you should lift as heavy as possible every single time you work out every day of the week. But there are some benefits to maximal effort strength training. There are also some benefits to speed training, to dynamic effort training, to rate of force development. There are benefits to lower intensity, longer duration, aka walking. There are benefits to sleeping. It's like everything has a benefit. It's just what you choose to focus on, what you choose to believe is going to drive your actions.
Oh, absolutely. I think regarding walking and the benefits of walking, I look at that to me as I was just not, I don't want to use the word mature, but in some way, for lack of a better adjective, I wasn't thinking like that. I thought I had to work hard all the time.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't going to happen. But the benefits that I have embraced with walking, actually even before quarantine started, back last summer, because I was out all the time when the weather was great, just it changed everything. You know, it just changed perspective, it changed mood, it changed energy, everything changed just with that. And then that leads to more and more and more and more and more action.
To go back to what you said about maturity, I think it's exactly what it is. It's a training maturity, right? Yeah. It's like the irresponsible trainee, the ignorant trainee believes that they must go as hard as they can every single time or it's not worth it. Yeah. We could see like different types of trainees. We have the trainee who doesn't train. It's funny, in Judaism for Passover, we have the traditional stories have different types of children. You have like the wise child who asks mm-hmm. good questions and wants to understand. You have the rebellious child who like distances themselves from the Jewish people, and like different stories about like different types of children that will ask questions during the holiday. And I see like different types of trainees. You have the trainee who doesn't work out. They don't exercise. They know they should. They know it's good for them, but they don't do it. Then you have the trainee who doesn't take rest days. They just go as hard as they can all the time. They're fearful of taking a rest day. And then you have the trainee who, I think in this case, we'll have three different ones. The one who doesn't work out, the one who works out way too much, and then the one who reaches the point where they understand working out is good for you. There are many different forms of exercise. Neither one is inherently better or worse. You need rest days and you need higher intensity days. And combining all of that is the best way to reach your results. And I think that is the most mature trainee. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And I think if we take that concept and bring it to maintenance, I think it's the same kind of thing, how you view that.
Yes.
And what that can help, right?
Oh my God, 100%, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think people don't look at the benefits of maintenance because they're so fixated on that number on the scale going up. That is the one thing, or I should have been doing this. I didn't do that yet, so I don't deserve, like you said, I don't deserve to get out of this misery that I'm in.
You know, I feel like with nutrition, there are so many more possible categories here, right? There are so many categories we could make with this. But on one hand, you have the person who doesn't pay attention to their nutrition at all.
Yeah.
At all. Like they have no restriction. They have no self-control. They eat as much as they want, whenever they want, without any paying attention to any food quality whatsoever. And you have that person. Then you have the person who goes the complete other direction, who focuses on everything. They count every calorie, every micronutrient. They never have anything quote unquote bad. They take pride in not eating anything bad. They look down on others for eating something bad. It's like they take it to that extreme that like both of those two are disordered eating. Just opposite ends of the spectrum. And then if we want to just make it the same number of categories, then we get to the final category of the person who understands, listen, I need some form of restriction because without any restriction, there's chaos. I need some restriction in order to have order. They also know too much restriction, too much order isn't good. We need a little bit of chaos in our life. It's good. We have to have this balance, this yin and yang of chaos and order, right? It's important to have foods that I like, regardless of their nutritional quality. It's important to be able to enjoy my favorite foods without feeling guilty or shameful about it. It's important to include those because, number one, it's part of life. It's part of culture. It's part of just being having a healthy relationship with food. And so being able to have the best of both worlds there is probably the most mature, advanced dieter. And they also understand in that same category, we have the person who understands being in fat loss phase all the time is going to do more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is this. If you are perpetually in a fat loss phase for years and years and years, then you actually have not been a fat loss phase for years and years and years. If you've been constantly trying to lose fat for years, then you haven't actually been losing fat for years. You haven't been in a deficit. You've probably gone in and out of different extreme cycling versions of reducing your calories radically, followed by binging or eating too much, not really trying at all, going back and forth. Whereas, okay, cool. If this hasn't worked for you for 3, 5, 10, 20 years, what do? You try something in between. Go towards maintenance. Like maintenance is really, I think, that's why you and I call it momentum. It's such a magical place. When you could go to momentum without guilt, when you can go there and know that this is a great place to be for slow and steady, enjoyable progress, you start to win.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think, and we always say this is where we need to live anyway. This is where we should be spending most of our life in this kind of, in that kind of phase. And knowing your maintenance, like, once you get to know it, you don't, I mean, I've been in maintenance for years, other than that 6 month stint of a surplus, you know, you just kind of know, you can just kind of go on cruise control and it's so stress-free. And the benefit, the biggest benefit to me is once you know your calories for maintenance, you know, give or take or whatever, you can eat a little less and be in a deficit, eat a little more and be in a surplus. I mean, the world opens up to you.
You become what is now such a fad or common phrase, which is significantly overused, intuitive eater, right? You become an intuitive eater. You can intuitively know if you're eating in a calorie deficit. You can intuitively know if you're eating in a surplus. You can intuitively manipulate your calorie intake based on your goals. And you don't necessarily have to track every single one. And I think probably the most common question that here is, well, number one, well, how do you become an intuitive eater? And or the other question is, well, how do you know how many calories you should eat for maintenance? And there's a lot with this, but I mean, the answer no one likes to hear is it's trial and error.
Yeah.
It's trial and error while being ruthlessly consistent. Mm-hmm. People don't make progress or don't see certain progress for a week or two and they think everything's ruined and they quit. It's like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You tried for 2 weeks and then that's called it quits and you weren't even 100% consistent for those 2 weeks. You were like 75% consistent. It's like, that's one of the things I love about what you've said from day one, which is your number one recommendation is just write down everything you eat without even tracking. I've always loved that you give that recommendation because the number of people that I've seen who follow that recommendation, who finally take your advice and do that, they're always... But they swear up and down, I thought I was being perfect. I thought that I knew exactly what I was eating. And I realized from writing everything down, wow, I was way overboard. They're not even tracking. They're not tracking calories. They're just writing everything down. When people can put their ego aside, follow your instructions, write everything down, they get over themselves. Like, people are so egotistical. Like, well, I know how much I'm doing. It's like, shut up. If you're not making progress.
Because it would be working.
That's exactly right. if you're spending all this time on Instagram, all this time on podcasts, all this time buying people's programs, all this time and energy, getting all this knowledge, but you're not seeing progress, shut up. Put your ego aside and write everything down. Just straight up, just do it. And if you're still not making progress, I think one of the best things that you and I have said consistently, especially in the inner circle, go to the doctor, get your metabolic cart test, get your thyroid checked, get all your blood work. If it comes back that your thyroid is down and your metabolic cart comes back and it's not functioning optimally, cool. Then now you know, and you can get medicated and everything can go back to normal. And also you know that that wasn't your fault. That was a physiological issue. On the other hand, and this is what most people struggle with, when it comes back normal for the vast majority of people, and they realize, well, you're totally fine. It's not your age. It's not your gender. It's not your metabolism. It's not your thyroid. Then you've got to take a hard look in the mirror and say, all right, like, I got to call myself on my own BS and really get my stuff together and actually do what Susan said and write down everything I eat. Everything for 3 days, every single thing that you put in your mouth.
Yeah.
Everything. It's like, yeah. And take pictures of it if you want. Take a picture of every single thing you eat and send it to a friend or a coach or post it in the inner circle, whatever it is. Take a picture of it. It's like, it's one thing to write it down. It's another thing to like, okay, well, this is the actual portion size. This is actually what I'm eating. It's like just being aware of what you're eating is so beneficial. And that's how you can start to know what your maintenance will be.
That's exactly how you know what your maintenance is going to be. You have to become aware of what you're putting in your mouth first.
That's right.
You really and like you said, you have to be honest about it.
People don't want to hear that.
Yeah, no, they don't. And I can't tell you the last couple of weeks it's been heavy on that. A lot of people are struggling basically they're struggling with being honest with themselves and being consistent with what they say they're doing. Isn't it interesting how we as humans just overestimate how consistent we are, you know?
In everything.
And I always bring people back to the calendar that we use in the inner circle all the time and just have them try that. I mean, just how many days are you actually hitting your calorie target? And then I'll get questions like, well, if I miss it by like 30 calories, do I still get a check? No, you don't. And it's not because 30 calories are going to be the difference, but that one day it's going to be 30, the next day it's going to be 50, or, you know, I mean, the line gets really fuzzy. And if you're trying to figure out, am I truly being consistent or not, you got to draw a line in the sand. And I don't think people want to do that.
That's exact. There's been a huge movement away from any form of restriction. There's been a huge push in recent years, I'd say probably in the last 2 to 3 years, that any form of restriction is bad. That any time you restrict yourself, you're causing harm. That is outrageously ignorant in any sense of the word. And any logical individual can have a logical conversation, will understand that without any restriction whatsoever, you are setting yourself up for a very, very dangerous path in all aspects of life. And this holds true in nutrition. This holds true in strength training. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so without restriction, then you – under that logic, then someone should never take a rest day. Don't restrict yourself. Never take a rest day, ever. And by the exact same opposite logic, well, you should never work out. You should never hold yourself to that level of accountability. If you don't want to work out, don't work out. Don't restrict yourself. It's it works in both ways negatively. Yeah. Restriction and we could call it, I wouldn't call it dedication, but I would call it structure. Structure is another word for it. No one would argue that structure is bad, but for some reason, people often say restriction. That is complete. It's not restriction. Restriction isn't inherently bad. It's restriction done without limit. In the same way that a lack of restriction without limit is bad for you, just completely and utterly letting you do whatever you want, whenever you want, versus like it's the never understanding how much you're eating, versus knowing to the exact calorie and micronutrient exactly. Like those are both extreme ends of restriction that are not good, right? Mm-hmm. You have to find the balance. And the only way to find that balance is to go through periods of learning and trial and error. But if you're actually in a period of learning and trial and error, then you have to be consistent. Like if you're actually going to learn, you have to actually be consistent.
I mean, it's like any kind of scientific trial or whatever. That they're trying something to see what happens. they're not there. The results they get after a scientific trial are completely invalid if they haven't been consistent with what they have set forth as their guidelines.
Exactly.
I mean, the results that they get mean nothing if they haven't been able to be consistent with what their steps were or whatever. And I think that's where people go wrong right now with nutrition, and maybe even especially now. Their motivation's lacking. Maybe they don't want to be in a deficit. I mean, there's so many other things going on right now. It's probably making it even more difficult to wrap their head around. But I really feel like in general, people don't like the trial and error thing. They don't like that that's the answer. That I can't tell you that goal body weight times 12 is the perfect thing for you. I don't know. It's a great place to start. And, you know, you've got to be consistent with it for a period of time and track your progress and all the rest. I think I've had people tell me they feel like they're wasting time. I think it's the urgency. There's something like that inside. I'm wasting time.
You just hit the nail on the head. You just hit the nail on the head, Susan Niebergall. People feel like they're wasting time. I don't want to waste my time. What do you mean waste your time?
Right.
What do you mean? If you knew how ridiculous that sounded.
Yeah.
You don't want to waste your time. Trying is a waste of time. What are you talking about? If you won't start until you find the perfect calculation to figure out how many calories you need, then you will never start.
You'll never start.
If you won't start until you find the perfect training program, you'll never start. No one starts perfectly in anything, and nothing is ever perfect, ever.
Ever.
No matter what you start with, no matter what you end with, it's never perfect. And if you wait for perfect, you will always be waiting, it's just a terrible place to be. It's a terrible justification and excuse to use for yourself. It is really, if you really want something, then you're going to start with something. Whatever tiny, teeny, eensy, weensy, itty bitty grain of salt you can start with, goal body weight times 12, start with that. I'll tell you this, it won't be perfect for anybody, but it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And here, for some people, it will be too much of a calorie deficit. And how do you find out? Well, because you're losing weight too quickly. If you're doing it, you're losing weight way too quickly. If you're ravenous all the time, then increase your calories.
Right.
And go to goal body weight by 13. For other people, it'll be too many calories, right? Very few people will that be too many. Like, I actually have never met anybody. But for the sake of argument, for some people out there in the world, it'll be too many calories. How do you know? You're eating it and you're not losing weight over the course of a month. You haven't lost any weight whatsoever. So what do? Decrease your calories. And I'll tell you this, if goal body weight times 12 isn't working for you, odds are you're not tracking your calories properly.
100%. Yes, yes, yes. And that's another thing people don't want to hear. You know, I religiously measured. Well, somewhere there's something that's not happening, you know.
That's somewhere. Right.
And maybe it's the two lattes you drank and you just didn't figure those into the thing, or the handful of whatever, or you ate fries off your kid's plate 3 nights in a row or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff like that that you're not even thinking about. I mean, it's probably something like that. If it's not working at all,
the licks, bites, and tastes can really get people. Those LBTs, the lick of ice cream I had here, the couple bites of chicken nuggets I had off my kid's plate, the latte is a great one. A lot of people hear coffee is good for fat loss, and they don't realize that the coffee they're drinking isn't just coffee. That your latte has a significant amount of calories if you're putting milk or cream or sugar in it. It's that. Have you heard the story? I'm sure you have, about my client Jerry from many, many years ago, who was he lost weight initially when we first started, but he stalled out, and he's very Boston. He was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm being perfect with it. All that. He's like swearing up and down, and I believed him. But basically, I figured out that he was having 3 large iced coffees from Dunkin' Donuts every day with cream.
Dunkin' goes heavy on the cream.
Yeah. And not to mention a large.
Yeah. Oh, like, Jesus.
With a large coffee. Even it doesn't take a lot of cream to get a lot of calories.
Yeah.
It's a significant amount of calories in a very small amount of cream. And they put a lot in there in order to make it light, whatever it is. He was having about 1,000 calories or so worth of cream. And that's not necessarily uncommon.
Yeah.
It's not, if someone's having one large coffee with cream in it, listen, if you're just putting a dab of cream in there, then it might not be much. But if you're making it light, if you're making your coffee light with cream, you got to be measure that.
Measure that.
Measure it. If you're putting olive oil on top of your salad, measure that. Like, that's a significant amount of calories. It's not bad for you. If you're eating an avocado, measure that. You don't have to measure it every time, but at least do it for a week or two so you can understand what a portion size looks like. It's the portion sizes are usually way bigger than you think they are.
Yeah. I think we just suck at that too. I mean, we suck at figuring out the how consistent we're actually being, but we also suck at that's only probably 20 calories. Oh no, it was probably 120 calories.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you do that a couple times a day. And there you have found your answer, you know, why you've been maintaining when you have wanted to be in a deficit, you know, it's that kind of, you know, self audit. You have to kind of be open to that. And that's what I don't think a lot of people are.
You know what? And the sort of the interesting opposite side of the spectrum is that. So once people realize how many calories are in like cream and avocado and olive oil, one of the first reactions that many go through is they start going to all of the quote unquote diet foods, the 0% fats, mm-hmm. the no sugar maple syrups, all the stuff that is like very diet food. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with it per se. But when everything you eat is essentially like a very reduced calorie, low fat, fake sugar option, I've noticed a number of things. Number one, I've noticed that most people, when they do that, their hunger will radically increase, oftentimes because I don't know of anything physiological causing it, but it's a mental hunger where when they're eating something like we'll call it like a 0% fat cream cheese, which let's be honest, doesn't taste good. Cream cheese with 0% fat does not taste good. It just doesn't. It's just not real cream cheese. When you eat something like that, you end up oftentimes eating as many calories, if not more, than you would have if you just use the regular option, because you end up eating more of it because it's lower calorie and because it doesn't taste as good. So you want to get more on there to like make up for whether it's the low calorie maple syrup or whatever it is. And oftentimes you get hungrier because you're associating this with, well, there aren't as many calories in this. And you're just thinking about all the numbers and all the food, which causes some mental hunger. Yeah. I think it's so important when you start trying to lose fat and you start noticing how many calories are in things, make sure don't eliminate all fat. Don't go to all diet foods. Sure, incorporate some. If you want some lower fat cottage cheese or Greek yogurt, by all means. But I think if we're really going to talk about fat right now, fat is a very satiating nutrient. It's a very, very satiating nutrient. And if you eliminate fat, aside from all the health issues and hormonal issues that come with it, fat fills you up a lot.
Yeah. It really does. And I think, boy, that was a big mistake I made, I think, for a long time, because we think fat is just going to, you know, it's high in calories, it's going to make us fat. But I agree. I think stop with all the low sugar this, no sugar that, whatever, low fat, no fat, whatever, and expand your horizons a little bit, because I think that is key. It's going to make you feel fuller. And then you will ultimately eat less. But in our head, we're eating, you know, I don't know, full fat cream cheese or whatever it is we're eating. And we're thinking, oh my God, you know, I'm eating all these calories, when you probably would have eaten twice that amount of the non-fat version, you know, and had another half a bagel with it or something. I don't know.
I just think this is an important thing to be aware of mentally, right? Like, I'm not saying diet foods are bad for you at all.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to have a soda, I'm going to have a diet soda. Like, I would rather not get 240 calories from a Coke or whatever it is. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I'd
rather have a Diet Coke with 0 calories. Mm-hmm. But if you're constantly in a perpetual state of dieting and you often constantly find yourself hungry, then you should be aware of what you're eating. And it's so fun to me when I have someone who's constantly hungry and always dieting, and I look at what they're eating and it's just like 0% fat this, 0% fat that, 0 calorie this, low calorie that. And I'm like, Put some avocado on there, or just increase, instead of going to have like 0% yogurt, go to like 2%, whatever it is. Or instead of having skim milk, try going to whole milk for a little bit. And they'll like freak out. They'll be super worried. I'll be like, keep your calories the same, but just increase the fat and lay off the, like the Walden Farms stuff. Yeah. Like, if you like those, power to you. But those, I think those are disgusting.
I can't stand them either.
When you just go to regular stuff while keeping your calories in check, you'll notice consistency often becomes so much easier because you're not feeling so deprived all the time. You're not feeling, even though you're restricting your calories, you're not feeling so deprived.
And that kind of brings us back to maintenance, because that, it's the same thing with people that are just beating the deficit dead horse to death.
Yes.
And not being consistent with it. And maybe it's time to give yourself and the horse a break here.
Increase your calories a little bit. Go into maintenance. Eat real food. Just like, it's so crazy what that can do for the mind and the body. Just take some time. And listen, I think this is Corona aside, right? This is this isn't even Corona specific. If you want to do it during quarantine, because it's difficult for you to focus on fat loss right now, you're just not in the mindset, great, do it. If you want to focus on fat loss right now, cool, do it. But be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And I think there's two major different types of people who want fat loss. You have the person who just hasn't done anything, or maybe they've gained weight recently. They're not tracking their calories. They're not watching their food. They're just eating way more than they should. And then you have the person who is been trying in their head. They've been trying as hard as they can. They've been perpetually dieting for so long. If you're the person who's just not been trying much at all, and they've just really, you feel as though maybe you've let yourself go, then it might be time to get some more order in your life, a little bit and get back on track. Whereas if you're the person who feels like you've been trying nonstop over and over again, you're the person who needs maintenance now more than ever.
Yeah.
If you constantly feel like you were constantly restricted, constantly dieting and not seeing progress, go into maintenance for a little bit. And be very consistent with it. You are the ideal person to do it.
We've had so many Inner Circle members who have done that. Mm. And to their pleasant surprise, they have felt phenomenal. And they've made a ton of progress during their maintenance stint. And some went on to a surplus. Some have gone back down into a deficit. I mean, it just gives you more energy and clears your head. I think the mental energy is draining as much as anything else.
And absolutely.
It's just sometimes it's time. But even now in these circumstances, there are people that are sitting on the couch. You know, the tendency is you could sit on the couch all day, binge watch Netflix, because God knows you don't want to watch the news. And you can just sit there and eat and just let yourself, you know, let yourself go. That's not a good thing. And what's not a good thing for you maybe either is having to meticulously count everything. There's this gray area between these two that you got to find, especially right now.
It's so interesting. One thing I've found with the people, I've seen this with a bunch of the Inner Circle members who've gone into maintenance momentum, is they'll go into maintenance and they'll be very nervous and scared and to lose all their progress, but they trust it. They go into it, they try it. And number one, their strength increases. Their energy in their workouts get better. They get more motivated to exercise because they have more energy. They don't feel as deprived because they're not restricting themselves so much, so meticulously. And the most interesting part about this is they actually start to lose fat. And this is one of the arguments that people will say is like, well, clearly you don't need a calorie deficit because I've known people who've increased their calories and they lost fat. Well, here's the funny thing about that is, when you feel like you've been depriving yourself, you can only eat 1,200 calories all the time, but then you increase to more of a maintenance intake, and we'll call it 1,800 or 2,000, and you start to develop a healthy relationship with food, what often happens is you won't feel as hungry anymore because you have a healthier relationship with food. You're not tracking every single thing meticulously. And when you're not if you're tracking calories meticulously and you're eating 1,200, you will make sure that you eat every last calorie. You will make sure you eat every last calorie. When you have a healthy relationship with food and you're eating more, if you're not hungry, you're not going to eat. So a lot of the people who say they're in maintenance and they lost weight eating more calories, a lot of times what's happening is they're actually in a deficit. They're just not trying as hard because they have a healthy relationship with food.
Yeah.
And it's like they don't have to try as hard to be in the deficit because it's more sustainable. It's easier. And so they'll say, well, I'm in maintenance, but I'm losing fat. It's like, well, technically you're actually in a deficit. And that's why you're losing fat. You have a healthier relationship with food now.
It just feels different.
Absolutely.
Like they're not uber focused on every bite, every calorie, every this, every that. It's freeing.
If you're eating calories just to eat calories because you have a few more left, I would say that's a little bit of an issue. If you're only eating calories for the sake of eating calories, then okay, and keep in mind, this isn't saying eating calories because you're at a social event and then you want to participate. This isn't saying eating calories because you're traveling and you want to try new foods. This is saying when you're in your house and you have 1200 calories to eat, and it's like you're just eating them because you have them left in your calorie allotment, you need to analyze your behavior. You need to analyze what you're doing and say, okay, this isn't right. I shouldn't solely be eating calories just because I have calories left.
Yeah. That's just an incredibly difficult relationship with food that's going to just get worse.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
Yeah. And I think that's where people usually spin their wheels. It's just, it comes back to the whole mindset thing and wrapping around food and oh my God, I'm going to increase my calories as I go into momentum and the scale may go up a pound or two. You know, I've ruined everything. You know, it just, that's tough. That's, I mean, it's just, you know, there's no magic wand. I think everyone wants me to throw magic dust on them, say, here, boom, you're good, go. You know, it's trust. It's giving it a fair shot. And letting it happen, because, you know, you play out, okay, worst case scenario, you do this for an extended period of time and you've been consistent with it. And let's say you don't feel good. Let's say whatever it, okay. You just go back to being in a deficit. I mean, worst case scenario, there's That's nothing right. really to lose, you know?
It's exactly right. You can always go back to what you were doing before if you want to. I think one of the most important things to understand is you will mess up.
Yeah.
You're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. If you go into this thinking you're never going to make mistakes, you're an idiot. And you would never tell anybody that. You and I work with a lot of parents, right? A lot of parents in your circle, moms, dads, but also there's a lot of parents in there. And one of the things that we like to oftentimes say to them is, listen, if your kid failed a test or didn't get an internship or didn't get a job or didn't get into a school that they wanted, would you just tell them to quit? Like, would you just tell, all right, well, you know what? You should just stop. You should stop trying.
Yep.
It's like, stop. Of course not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's number one. That's not a good parent. Number two, and probably more importantly, is just terrible advice.
Right.
Never tell anybody just to stop trying or not to do it just because they might fail. You'd say try and try again and try again. And that's all this is. And we all know this logically in all aspects of life. But one of the greatest sources of anxiety is ambiguity, not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the more that you can know that you will not know what's going to happen, the more that you can find security and understanding and being okay with not knowing, the more consistent you'll be and the better you'll be okay with it. Just know right now, you're going to mess up and you're not necessarily going to know what's going to happen. But the only way to know is to make it your own experiment and to try and be consistent. And like you were saying, it's probably one of the best points of all of this is that a study loses its credibility when they can't track the participants' consistency, which is why the most reliable study is a double blind controlled trial. When they're controlling their intake, they're controlling their activity, they're controlling everything about them. When the participants or subjects leave and they can't necessarily control exactly what they're doing, that study is inherently less credible than a controlled trial. This is just a very basic understanding of how scientific studies are rated based on their credibility. So if you're going to rate your own level of success, then you must adhere to a certain level of consistency in order to know what's going to happen. But again, no, you will make mistakes. You won't know 100% what's going to happen. And find comfort in knowing that for the first 90 days that you try it.
It's
get used to it and just track your consistency above all else.
I think that's probably the best way to end it is just, you got to try. You got to try and you got to be fair and honest about your trial.
That's exactly right.
100%. Just like those studies. Yeah. Otherwise, the data that you have is not reliable. It doesn't mean anything.
That's why what I loved what you were saying, but if you go over by 30 calories, then you weren't consistent. And it's not because those 30 calories ruin your progress, but because we have a standard for what consistent is. And if you break that standard, then you can continually break that standard. Mm-hmm. It's like you must adhere to a certain standard of consistency so you can actually have a legitimate experiment on yourself. That's what all – this is all experimentation. We're experimenting on ourselves. If you want to go into maintenance and experiment with it, then go into maintenance and experiment with it legitimately. Like an adult, follow through. If you want to be in a fat loss phase, then go into a deficit legitimately. Follow through. Either way, do whatever you're going to do and do it so that you can then know how it's going to work. But until you actually do it legitimately, then you're not going to know how it's going to work.
100%. 100%. That's amazing.
You're amazing. So take that.
So take that. Well, people that are hiding under the rock, why don't you tell them where they can find you? Everyone here knows you, but just in case. Yeah,
if you want to Google my name, Google Jordan Syatt, S-Y-A-T-T. You'll find everything you want to know.
That's everything. You're everywhere. And let's not leave here without just mentioning the body weight challenge that's still going on right now in case anybody needs structure, actually.
Yeah. So if you want exercises and workouts that you can do at home, regardless of whether you have equipment or not, regardless of whether you're a complete beginner, you can't do any push-ups, or you could do 20 push-ups or 100. We have a brand new bodyweight workout challenge. It's 30 days. It's called Kick Corona in the Dick. And it's every day, Susan and I give you a new workout, tell you exactly what to do. Some are mobility focused, some are strength focused, some are endurance focused, some are muscle definition focused. It's a brand new challenge. You can go to jordansyatt.com, JordanSyatt.com. You can get it right there. And if you get that manual, you also get a free month in our inner circle.
That's the best part is joining us for a month. That would be great. It would be great to have everybody. And the thing that I love about this as much as anything else, that it's laid out simply. It's just, you don't have to think about which one do I do today. This is day one. This is day two. I mean, it's all right there. Video demos in there, everything. It's very well set up for anybody that wants structure. You talk about wanting something to have you get up and get motivated and get moving and taking action, that would be it.
Yeah, 100%. And once you get that, again, you get the free month in the inner circle. And then once you're in the inner circle, you get access to all of, we have our maintenance manual that Susan and I created. So if you're interested in learning more about maintenance and having a more structured, systematic approach, we have our maintenance manual, we have our chin-up manual, we have our everything you could ever want in there. So we hope to see you in there.
Yeah, it'd be amazing to see everybody. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Susan. I love you.
I love you too. I hope you get out of that closet.
Yeah, I need to. I'm boiling hot in here. I need to get out. My computer sounds like an airplane right now. It's like, I need to get off.
I just do. All right. I love you.
Bye. I love you.
Bye.